Hello, my name's Ian Campbell. Welcome to About Regional. I've got the card table set up in the backyard today, hoping to capture this beautiful November day. The skies are brilliant blue, life is buzzing around me. Bees, hoverflies, butterflies, birds. And I'm hoping the microphone might capture some of that and bring it into your day. Thanks for your company. In today's program, we'll drop in on a literary lunch at Bermagui with author Tim Elliott. His new book is called Farewell to the Father. We'll also chat to Bemboka chef Patrick Rubinson. When Patrick talks truffles, his mouth starts to water. And a bit later on, we'll head into the garden with Tangier permaculturalist Kathleen McCann.
I love seeing photographs of places that have been left, like Chernobyl. Mm-hmm. So if you have a look at on the web about Chernobyl and what it looks like now, they've actually got cameras in there so you can have a look. Nature has taken over in a really big way. You know, whole cement areas, whole houses are just full of trees. They're starting to rip up everything so other plants can come and turn it back into what it should be, which is a forest. Mm-hmm. And exactly the same thing happens in your gardens.
More from Kathleen shortly. But first, the push is on to secure the closest thing Bega might have ever had to a youth and community centre. The Funhouse on Hill Street has been operating for just a handful of months. But in that time, it's become a big feature in the lives of the growing people around it and a go-to resource for a range of ideas and initiatives. 31-year-old Casey Hill is the driving force behind it. Casey moved to the Bega Valley 2 years ago, having spent the 5 years prior in Melbourne. During that time, she worked for a not-for-profit youth performing arts organisation called Outer Urban Projects. She brings that experience to Bega through the Funhouse. Casey and the Funhouse community have just launched a crowdfunding Possible campaign. Between now and the middle of December, they're hoping to raise $29,000 to cover next year's rent and buy themselves some breathing space and really think and plan strategically about turning the Funhouse into a real hub for youth in the town. When it comes to connecting with those young people, Casey and the Funhouse have nailed it. Since they opened in July, this quite ordinary looking brown brick building, two stories with an underground car park, has become a mecca for the town's high school students. But there's lots more planned.
Funhouse is about programming, right? It's about creating opportunities for people to come and experiment and socialize. And so I have, in addition to all this, on top of everything else that Funhouse offers, we have been doing a series of interesting programs. So we just had an open mic night that was run by one of my interns. So this is, again, more opportunities for young people. Whereas before, if a young person wanted to have an open mic night, they'd have to look for a space, number one, that was affordable. Number two, they'd have to have insurance. And, you know, so there's all these hurdles that people have to jump over to put on events. And where Funhouse differs is that someone can come to me and I can give them the means and the tools and I can say, look, go ahead, go for it. Mm-hmm. So I told Sasha, one of our interns, what would you like to do? And she said, I want to have an open mic night. And so I said, go for it. So she put together a flyer and I paid for all the flyers to be printed. And because we have lots of people under one roof, she was saying, oh, well, I need equipment. And luckily we had the Bega Sound Collective has a PA and she knew someone else who had this. So again, it's just about it makes these kind of events so much easier to run when we're all investing and pooling our resources into one space. That's why Funhouse needs more support, because it needs more programming. It needs and not just Funhouse needs more programming, but Bega really desperately needs some place that young people can go on a Friday night. I just bought a bunch of candy, for instance, for the Halloween. We're doing fun, or what is it, Haunted Funhouse on the Monday. So that people could come and, you know, I'll be playing music and movies and just do, you know, dress ups and stuff. So really it's a cultural center in every sense of the word, Ian. I'm trying to offer something for young people especially, but not just for young mm-hmm. people, but a place that they can go. You know, I can't think of any place that a young person could go and be on a Friday night to just hang out, to play ping pong, you know.
And board games. You've got young kids playing board games off their devices.
Right?
Yeah,
it's incredible, right? Yeah, they've been, the Get on the Tabletop, Brendan White and Sindel have been they've been just the icing on top of the funhouse cake. They are doing things for the Bega Valley that I haven't seen anybody else be able to do, which is getting kids away from their screens, getting kids of all ages, teenagers, showing young kids how to play certain new card games. It's been, every day I'm blown away by what is happening at Funhouse.
So what's the secret then to engaging with youth? There are many well-meaning organisations in our community trying to do just that. You've come along and you've just nailed it. Do you know why or how? What is the secret?
Yeah, I think the secret, Ian, is just asking them and consulting with them. I don't pretend to know. I'm not getting any younger, so I don't pretend to know what's cool anymore. But if I ask them, what's cool, then they tell me, and then I know. So I think just listening, I've been doing quite a bit of listening, and that has kind of, I think, created an atmosphere where rather than me pushing my agenda, I've allowed for a larger youth voice to kind of push for their agenda in Funhouse.
Some of those agencies that I speak of, have they been of support? I know there's a big PCYC logo on the front window of Funhouse now.
Yes, so PCYC's been very supportive. But again, what's really frustrating about, I think what I'm finding frustrating with this old model of community organization, mm-hmm. is that it still needs financial stability, you know? Mm-hmm. So here PCYC is looking to make money, really, right? That's it's hard. It's like at the end of the day, all these organizations, we have to make money. And so what's been interesting is I've been making money via dance. And that has been what I pumped straight back into Funhouse. Mm-hmm. So it's got, and this is the other thing that's been confusing to people. Sorry if I'm blabbing.
Not at all.
Again, like I said, I'm
blab away.
Okay, good. But it's about business, isn't it? It's about good business, and this is why people are getting confused. They say, are you an incorporated association? What is this? You know, and I'm saying, well, eventually we're going to, if we can make the possible mm-hmm. target, we will become a cooperative. But what still has to be at the heart of that is that we are doing good business, which means that we are able to sustain, obviously, but that we're really questioning what it is that good business is, right? Because good business isn't just making money. And I think that's what's frustrating with an organization like PCYC. It's like, look, if it's not paying for itself, we can't do it. And it's like, but why isn't it paying for itself? Mm. I think it's not paying for itself because there's not enough young youth engagement. Mm-hmm. The young people aren't fueling the initiatives. They're not the ones who get to say how the money's spent. You see? And so, of course, if they don't like how the money is spent, if they're not into what the programs are, then they're not going to come. So it's really about figuring out, and that's, again, the Funhouse way, is figuring out how to engage the youth and how to fund their ideas. And then from there, once we're funding their ideas, it starts to pay for itself. It's amazing. It's incredible. It's been incredible to watch. Yeah.
Very altruistic, which I think some people might struggle to understand.
Look, it gets back to this good business, right? Social enterprise and investing in your community is actually really great for business. And so it's really, I'm doing this because obviously I have a bit of time and a bit of extra money, but I'm doing it because I want good things to happen in the community I'm a part of.
And that one day your dance classes might deliver you an income instead of putting all that money into Funhouse as
well,
you are
there
now.
There you go. If the possible campaign is successful, then I'll get to make some money again. Which will be good. But like I said, I'm not in a position where I'm hurting that much. Mm-hmm. So, but what is hurting is my time and my energy and kind of my looking down the line. That's hurting a lot. That's why this possible campaign is so important, because if I know I have that much community backing, then it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But if I don't have that much community backing, then, unfortunately, Funhouse, just if I'm the only one driving it, it's just not going to make sense.
Casey Hill there, the driving force behind the Funhouse on Hill Street, Bega. The possible campaign campaign is ticking along nicely. Last time I checked, there was around $9,000 already pledged. They're hoping to raise $29,000. To chip in, head to the Funhouse website or Facebook page. Just search Funhouse Studio Bega. Hello, this is About Regional, a program that looks to showcase the magic, ideas and people of southeast New South Wales. My name's Ian Campbell. I'm sitting at the card table in my backyard, hoping to capture this magic November day. The bush is really alive. I hope you can hear it in the background. We'll wander through the veggie patch shortly and talk capsicums with Tanger permaculturalist Kathleen McCann. And your mouth will water when you hear of the passion that Bemboka chef Patrick Rubinson has for truffles. October was Mental Health Month in the Bega Valley, and a collaboration between Candelo Books in Bega, Il Passaggio Restaurant in Bermagui and About Regional highlighted the story of Tim Elliott and his family through a special literary lunch. Tim is an award-winning journalist whose work you probably know from the Sydney Morning Herald. His latest book, Farewell to the Father, came out of an article that Tim wrote for the Sydney Morning Herald's Good Weekend magazine. The article generated one of the largest reader responses in the paper's history. The book is a memoir of Tim's childhood, growing up with a parent afflicted by mental illness, his brilliant doctor father, Max. It's a book that's loaded with love, rage, and surprising humour. Just a warning, some fruity language and strong content on the way. You were about 8 years old, I think, when you witnessed your father's first suicide attempt, and you were there with him, and what could have been your last words to each other, your dad said something really peculiar to you at that time.
Yeah, I was about seven, and I came downstairs. It was another one of those nights, and I came downstairs, except this was something terminal about this night, because the yelling and ranting had stopped, and I could sort of sense that my brother and sisters were downstairs in the kitchen. So I went down to the kitchen, and Dad was sitting in the corner. He had this moccasins that we'd bought him for Christmas. I still remember his brown dressing gown and his beautiful sort of moccasins that we thought were really cute on him. And, we loved it. Just reminded me, given that he still hadn't made him happy, I tried to make him happy with this, and he's still trying to kill himself. And he was sitting in the corner, and he slumped there, and he had a massive pill overdose and half a bottle of gin, and he was drooling from the mouth and incoherent, and he was weeping, and all the snot was coming out of his nose. And I said to him, please don't, you can't die, you can't die now, I don't want you, please can't die. And he said to me, he hugged me, and he said the last thing he said to me was, always be a man. And it was very confusing, because I thought, well, I'm a boy. So everybody grows up to be a man. Like, every boy will grow up to be a man. And Dad wasn't a macho. It wasn't like always be a man. He wasn't like that at all. He was a very nuanced guy, very sophisticated, with a great intellect. And so he wasn't saying go out and play rugby, go out and kill the world. He was saying something at the time I couldn't understand, though. And I really think for the rest of my life I've been trying to figure out what the fuck he was talking about. I really do think I've never really understood what he meant. And I really maybe think that the book was... I really would love to know. And at the time I was like, you can't die. I want you to explain what... You need to be around to explain to me what you mean by that.
You might not know what your old man meant by that, but how do you define that? How would you answer that question?
I have no idea. I really have no idea. You got an idea?
I think we're all working on it. Yeah. Yeah.
Any guy in the room have an idea about that? I don't have no idea. I think it's just meant to be, you're meant to be happy. You're meant to be happy with who you are, and be... Let that happiness roll over your family in a way that nurtures them, and so that you can still talk to them as a father when they're a kid in 20 years' time.
Tim Elliott and I speaking at a special literary lunch held during Mental Health Month at Il Passaggio Restaurant in Bermagui. Tim's latest book is called Farewell to the Father. It's a cracking read. With bees and butterflies exploring the lavender in front of me, this is About Regional with Ian Campbell. Thanks for listening in. The truffle season in southeast New South Wales is not long over, but already there's a bloke out Bemboka way who's counting down the days to next year's truffle season. Executive chef and professional culinary educator Patrick Rubinson has a real passion for this fungi. And during the winter months, Patrick runs a series of exclusive truffle dinners. People come from all over Australia every year to sample these 10 courses inspired by and featuring truffles. Now, having never experienced the taste, the smell, the mystery of the truffle, Patrick invited me and a bunch of friends along to experience his passion firsthand.
Truffles, to me, I mean, I can't wait for the season. The aroma just gets everywhere, and its aroma, its smell is earthy, nutty, seductive. I'm saying this while my mouth's watering. just thinking about them. And they raise a winter, absolutely.
So how did you first come across truffles? It's not something that Australians are accustomed to. How did you come across truffles?
Well, in my travels in kitchens, the truffle was always guarded in the chef's office.
And
only senior staff could handle it, and there was always this mystery of mystique about the truffle. Mm-hmm. And then out here, they've started growing truffles in Australia, yeah. And the industry is picking up, and the popularity, dare I say it, familiarity is almost breeding contempt, because, oh yeah, it's a truffle. And it's losing some of its magic, mm-hmm. but it's also still magical.
Tell us about the first truffle you had.
The first truffle that I actually purchased and owned myself came from Canberra. And I think for a couple of minutes, I just held it and looked at it. And what you don't do, you don't bring the truffle up to your nose. It's considered wrong. It's an invasion of the truffle's privacy.
I see.
You actually hold it and you wait for the smell to come to you, and it is. It's a wonderful, wonderful smell. Again, the mouth is watering just thinking about it. Because the season is very short, mm-hmm. it's a bit like in the good old days, you're going to be waiting for the peaches to come along at Christmas or something. It's season runs from about mid-June till early August, plus or minus a week or so, depending on weather.
Yep.
So it's not something that you can have all year round, which in itself helps to keep the mystique.
Makes it special, yeah.
The thing is, of course, though, that the Australian truffle growers are exporting like mad to the Northern Hemisphere because it's out of season up there. So, in effect, it's extending that truffle experience all year round, which, you know, if Father Christmas came every day, would it be magical?
So there's perhaps potential there for regional communities to grow truffles, to be a part of that trade between the northern and southern hemisphere, to build an industry?
Well, certainly. Where I get my truffles from, the Marshalls in Braidwood, their market, big export market.
Yeah.
But then you've got Peter Clifton just up over there.
Yeah.
Who's got truffles in.
Hazelnut trees.
Yes. You must go on a truffle hunt.
Right.
You absolutely... Because, first of all, you're going through the truffery. The dog is running up and down seemingly random and then focuses in on a particular smell and works its way up to the tree and sits in front. That's the moment the handler says, right, okay, there's a truffle there, let's have a little smell. And they get on their hands and knees and smell for themselves.
Yep.
And they can determine whether it's ready to harvest or not. If it's not,
right.
They'll put a little flag in the ground and they'll come back to it. The dog goes, general truffle smell, identify there.
Mm-hmm.
The handler is the one that says we harvest or not. And so it becomes a surgical operation.
Yeah.
Archaeological.
Yes.
It's in its nature. And you start to work away, and then you see the top of the truffle, but you still don't know how big it is. And you start to work around it. and you try and find its outer dimensions. It's a bit like air crash investigation. They're looking for all four points of the truffle.
Yeah, right.
And so on and so forth and down. And suddenly you realise that this is the biggest truffle you've ever seen, and you've got shivers running down your back. You can see the root that's going in and coming out from the tree. And you break the root and you take out this truffle, and it weighs 217 grams. And your brain calculates that at Melbourne prices. And you're looking at nearly $1,000 in your hand.
Yeah, right. Executive chef and professional culinary educator Patrick Rubinson at Bemboka, speaking of his passion for truffles, and it's a passion I share now too. Those 10 courses we had the night before, just extraordinary. I've never had a dining experience like it. The truffle dinners will return next winter, but in the meantime, all through the year at Stroudover Cottage B&B at Bemboka, there's a host of culinary experiences you can share in with Patrick. Check the Stroudover Cottage website or Facebook page. The bush is really alive on this beautiful November day. I hope you can hear it. My name's Ian Campbell. This is About Regional. Thanks for tuning in. Tanja permaculturalist Kathleen McCann writes regularly for the About Regional website. Her latest article will set you up for veggie abundance this spring. We're sitting in front of last season's capsicums. I was just about to pull them out. You say no.
That's right, Ian, because you can see that there's new growth starting to happen. I'd probably cut them back a little bit, just give them a tip cutting down to the nearest leaf. Mm-hmm. You definitely need to give the soil a bit of a feed up. So podlings out there, the ground underneath the capsicums is covered in a very light little weed. What I'd recommend Ian does is give the whole area forking, which means just put a fork in as deep as you can go and rock it gently backwards and forwards to aerate it. Then I'd give it a sprinkle of whatever you've got on hand, so compost or maybe I'd put some potash down, I'd put a little bit of dolomite, and then on top of that, I'd give that a water in, and then on top of that I'd put a really thick mulch. You could also give each plant a hit of some kind of nitrogen feed, so anything that's rotted down in a bucket of water over 2 or 3 months, so you could do comfreys, fantastic for that. Nettle is awesome, and actually any weeds that you see in your garden, they're great to put into a bucket of water because they're actually doing a job in the garden. All weeds or all plants are doing some sort of job for the soil and making it, replenishing it from what's missing in there. And so then if you do that for your capsicums, they will pop back and give you some delicious fruit eventually.
In your most recent article for About Regional, you make the point that it's all about the base. It's all about the soil. And I want to pick up on one of the suggestions you just had then around forking.
Yes.
That's forking rather than turning a sod the way dads might have done it. Why do you recommend forking instead of turning a sod?
Okay, so that kind of gardening has come straight out of England, old blighty. So we still have traditional garden methods handed down through our white ancestors about what you do with your soil, and it's fine over there. They have alluvial soils that are up to 2 metres deep, so turning a sod's not a big issue. But in Australia, our topsoils, you're lucky to get 6 inches of topsoil, or should I say, what's 6 inches? 10 centimetres?
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say 12, 10 to 12, yeah.
And scientists have found that there are microbial life below that 6 to 10 centimetre soils that are completely different to the ones on top. So when you dig it over and turn it upside down, you're killing both of them, and it takes a really long time for that soil to come back to good microbial soil health. So don't do it. It's called no-till or low-till.
So you're killing them because you're taking them out of one environment and then plonking them in a completely foreign environment. It's like us going to Mars.
Totally, yeah. Yes. It's exactly like that. Take them out of their own environment that they know what to do, and then suddenly they're in this other environment and they've got no idea what to do, and they often die.
It's one of the perks of the job, some one-on-one gardening advice from Tanja permaculturalist Kathleen McCann. More of Kathleen's wisdom on the About Regional website. This is About Regional, a new place for the people, ideas and colour of southeast New South Wales. You'll find more info on all the stories in today's program in the show notes and at the About Regional website. We can also connect via Facebook. Just search About Regional. You'll also find me on Twitter and LinkedIn. This program is available for sponsorship. If you're keen to talk more, my email address, hello@aboutregional.com.au. All my contact details are on the About Regional website. If you've got any feedback, advice or story ideas, I'm always keen to hear from you. We'll talk again in a couple of weeks. Thanks for taking the time to tune in. Look after yourself.